Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Present.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Bubba-Vanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And if you will join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item is the consent agenda. Is there any comments or motion to approve or?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Bubba-Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Community reports. We have introduction of Sergeant Brian Keene, John McDaniel. So you're in trouble already.
How does that work?
That's good.
All right. So it's my pleasure to introduce Sergeant Brian Keene to the CUNA Police Department. And this is actually his second stint in CUNA. And we're just super happy to have him back. He just recently promoted just a few months ago and was waiting for this opening to happen. So Mike Fertusco promoted to lieutenant. Actually, his official ceremony is next week. But he's already in the jail working as one of the two jail commanders. So with that opening, Brian was just, we were really pleased when he put in to come and be part of the team. And again, it's his second time. As of January 7th, that was his 20th year in law enforcement. And he's done everything from detention deputy, patrol deputy for 12 years, multi-agency gang task force, as well as the FBI Safe Streets gang task force for 2 years. He was in investigations for 3.5 years. He was on the SWAT team for 9 years. And so just comes with a lot of experience, but mostly he has an awesome reputation for being a great public servant and taking care of his troops. So he's already helped us recruit two new troops, and so we're just really thrilled to keep the ball rolling. So, and I'll
awesome.
Let Brian tell us a couple things.
Okay.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Like the chief mentioned, I was out here in 2016 prior to going up to our investigations division. I appreciated the just working in the contract city as opposed to, as you guys know, we also patrol the south and the north. And I like the buy-in of kind of a smaller community. It feels like you go fire to fire sometimes in other places and you can see things through a little bit more with the city. I've worked with the chief prior, and we have a good working relationship, so I'm looking forward to being out here and seeing you guys more often. And if you guys need anything from me, feel free to ask, get a hold of me, and I'll do everything I can for you guys and for the city.
You worked with the chief prior, and you still wanted to come back?
Right. Imagine that. I'm the guy, yeah.
Well, Brian, welcome. Thank you very much. Yes. We're going to miss Sergeant Fertusco and the things he's done, but welcome, and I'm happy that you put in and are going to be with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Glad to have you back. Thank you.
If you have any trouble with the chief, be sure and call us.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Item 6A is a public hearing continued from the November 19, 2019, and January 7, 2020 regular city council meetings for public oral and written testimony and third reading with consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-44, Wendy Howell, Planning and Zoning Director, and Bobby Withrow, Parks Director. Would you like to start us out, Bobby?
At this time,
Staff has no additional information to give you guys. We feel like we're kind of beating a dead horse, and so we just want to see what the public has to say and go from there.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign up who wishes to testify in this matter? Okay, so we'll go ahead and open this up. Kathy Geely, I think you've done this before.
Once in a while.
All right.
State my name and address.
Yes, please.
Kathy Gailey, 4300 Juneau Lane, CUNA, Idaho. Mr. Mayor, Madam President, and members of the City Council, thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. I read the article in the CUNA Melbourne News last week and about this hearing tonight, and then I went back and looked at the City Council meeting minutes from November and January. And as I told Mrs. Howell, I was very disappointed that no one from the public came to speak in favor of open space, and I felt like I needed to do that. I do recognize that what you're considering is an open space ordinance, but I feel like it's still open space. Again, I should not be surprised by that, because who would think you would need to defend open space? It is, after all, a public good. The first question I ask myself is, what is our goal? And everyone who worked on the comprehensive plan, I think, answered that question quite well when they said in the Envision CUNA plan that our goal is 1 acre of open space for every 80 residents. I would emphasize also that it's usable open space. I don't know that it's necessary, but I'd like to just say a few words about the need for open space, that usable open space contributes to a desirable and healthy place to live, work, and play. It enhances community, and it enhances property values. There's a buzzword, Park RX. I don't know if you've heard it, where physicians actually prescribe outdoor time because people are not outside enough, and that adversely affects their health. Open space is also not recoverable. Once space is used, it will never be open again, and now is the time we must preserve open space. Here in CUNA, there's a lot of pressure for higher and higher density housing from developers, and a lot of pressure from our citizens for lower density. There's a lot of criticism from our citizens for cramming in more and more houses, and a lot of pressure from developers to keep costs low by increasing density. There's a lot of pressure from other government entities here in the Valley to slow growth and protect agriculture as open space, and a lot of pressure to protect the rights of landowners. City Council and Planning and Zoning are tasked with finding a balance between these competing factors, finding the balance between the private interest and the public good, which is open space, finding the balance between short-term profits and long-term value. And again, I believe open space is a long-term value. But the balance that we find reflects the values of our community. This is a question about really more than usable open space. It really is a question about what kind of a community do we envision CUNA to be. I appreciate the efforts the staff has made to codify the open space goals of the comprehensive plan. It's important to establish and maintain these standards as we evaluate future development. And
You may go ahead. Go ahead.
I encourage you to approve the ordinance as proposed by staff.
Good timing.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
It was a lot shorter when I read it to myself.
It was great. Thanks, Kathy.
All right. Thank you. And again, I didn't have anybody else that signed up. Was there anybody that wished to testify in this matter that didn't get a chance to sign up? Okay. Thank you. And one of the things that came up last time was comments from the school board, and they did send a letter that was in favor of the ordinance, so. Signed by J.D. Grant, the chairman, which was in the packets. I assume you all had a chance to read all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, we are where we are.
I'll start out. We've come a long way from what was originally proposed. Originally, there was the potential to have 24% or even more open space. And certainly you could see some of the potential inequity maybe enticement to try to do smaller developments so as to kind of get around some of those larger open space percentages. I think the revised chart does a great job. Staff has indicated that they do think that the revised chart will still get us to the 1 acre per 80 people, which was the expressed goal in the comp plan, which we worked so hard on for several years. So I'm inclined to approve what we have in front of us. What other folks think?
I agree.
Okay, Richard?
I kind of agree with the great philosopher Bobby over there. It says we're probably beating a dead horse, but I think we finally have arrived at a percentage that I like. I was a little hesitant about the 3%, but I think 7% opens the door for where I want to be. So.
Okay,
I agree.
Okay. I move we go ahead and close. Well, I don't even know that I need to move it. Close evidence presentation, proceed to deliberation, which we've already done. This was the third reading, so I move we approve ordinance number 2019-44.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2019-44. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries.
I move we approve summary publication of ordinance number 2019-44.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve a summary publication of ordinance number 2019-44. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Carries. Item 6B is a public hearing continued from the January 7th, 2020 regular City Council meeting for public oral and written testimony and consideration to approve new water and sewer system fees and policies. Bob Bachman.
Mayor and Council, at the last council meeting, we were asked to provide some additional information on a three-year breakdown. As you can see in the packet, we have provided that. If you need further explanation how we got there, I'll probably have Jared help with that. To utilize our time the best possible, we'll just wait and stand for any questions you guys might have.
Okay, so one of the things that we asked for was looking at different phase-ins. And I think that looking at the phase-in approach, it is obvious that that's probably not a good idea because it ends up making the overall costs per month more and kind of drags us into a precarious situation. So do we know, I didn't look to see, did we have a timeline we were looking at wanting to implement this?
I think originally we had posted for February 1 if it would have approved the last meeting.
For February 1?
Yeah, so I think we would probably be looking at March 1 at this point.
Would be the earliest.
Would be the earliest.
Give us plenty of time to get notifications out so everybody knows what's going on. So the only comments that I have had since the last meeting mostly had to do with the tiered rate, and I think one suggestion was that you would pick a tiered rate, and then at some point during the year, if you wish to, you could change that one. I think as I looked at that, it kind of appeared to me kind of like with your minutes use on your cell phone. If you go over, then you get charged extra. And it was kind of a making it easier for people to budget, I guess, was kind of their point. So I think we have the tiered in rate, so I don't know. It looks to me like we've done okay there. So, and again, this is a public hearing. I didn't have anybody sign up to testify on that. Was there anybody in the audience who wished to testify in this matter and didn't get a chance to sign up? Yes, sir.
I'm just going to speak from here. I think my voice will carry.
I need you to come up just so the recorder, yeah. And so if you would, just state your name.
Yeah, Dennis Leonard.
And your address. And then your address.
Oh, address 1005 North Strike Way, CUNA.
Thank you. All right, you can go ahead.
Okay, my biggest thing is this sewer thing of yours. What's the reason for raising it up $7?
So we did a rate study, and what has been occurring, the water side actually is good. We're in the black on that one, doing fine. With the sewer rates, we're actually falling behind a little over $1 million a year because the user fees aren't high enough to keep up with the demand for maintenance and repairs on the system. And so that's the main reason for the increase for sewer. But so the water we're actually reducing slightly, and the sewer we're raising, but that kind of balances down a little bit. But
well, not actually, but
no, not evenly. No, I'm just saying it helps knock a little off.
In other words, what you're saying is these user rates, is this replacing pipes, paying the employees, taking care of the treatment plant out there, is that all encompassed in this?
Not necessarily. It's, I don't know. Bob, do you want to kind of explain? I'll let Bob kind of explain that a little bit.
Yes, sir. Mr. Mayor and Council, the user rates go to pay for repair and maintenance of the system, which does include labor. But most of it is just upkeep and repair to maintain the system as it is in the ground today. It does not pay for expansion or future growth, just repair and maintenance.
Okay. So if you look back 25 years from now and you had the original layout of CUNA, those pipes are the oldest, I would imagine. Anything that's connected to that, your builders have all put in already. It's all brand new, so there should be no upkeep to that, really.
We're actually
talking about an old system that's very small in comparison to what's been added onto it, right?
We have it's a little more complex than that. Okay. We have multiple lift stations that are reaching their term of life, multiple other pieces of infrastructure involved in the sewer system that is needing maintenance and or is going to need maintenance. Our approach would be to stay ahead of the maintenance instead of have a major break or repair needed that would, you know, potentially put us in a bad situation. So it's a little bit more complex than the knowing the age of the pipes in the ground, but there are a significant amount of the infrastructure in the ground is reaching, you know, 20, 25 years old, which the life expectancy is generally 15 to 20 years old.
15 to 20 for, don't they use plastic or polypropylene for whatever you, they don't use concrete or tile or anything like that in the new systems, do they?
It's more of the electronics, the pumps, oh, and that such.
Okay. All right, that's what I needed to say. I appreciate it.
Okay, you're very welcome. Thank you, sir. Was there anybody else?
Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I have a question for Jared. On the water and irrigation fund figures that are presented, you've got contingency, physical assets, and coverage ratio. On the sewer, we're at 8.09. What is a comfortable ratio that the city should be at, given that facility?
Sure. So, Mayor, Council, so I would say a comfortable coverage ratio is at least 25 to 30% if you want to avoid the possibility of having to go for bond. I mean, obviously, if you're willing to and able to go for bond, then, you know, that calculus may change. But I would say 25 to 30% is at least what I would hope to have.
Does that change with the age of the assets, or is that a standard commitment regardless of the age of the facility?
I mean, I would think that if you're looking at the historical cost, I would probably, if I want to avoid a bond, I would probably want to just look at it on a case-by-case basis. But for me personally, 25% to 30% is probably the best number.
Okay. So the contingency at this time should be approximately 20,000 then?
So in the sewer? In the sewer, it should be between 15 to 20 million.
Or a million, yes. Okay. Thank you, Jared.
Yep.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And, yeah, so, again, this is kind of one of those deals where we want to avoid ending up in the position, like, I don't mean to pick on NAMPA again, but they had spent too many years of getting behind, and then all of a sudden it was a matter of your rates can go up to $100 a month, or we can bond and you can pay for all of this now. So it was an either-or type of thing. They chose to bond for it and take care of the situation that way. But I think fiscally, in order for us to be responsible here, we need to make sure that we're keeping up with the times. So that's kind of where a lot of this came from. But fortunately, the water system was good and all of that. So just getting behind on sewer.
Okay, so we essentially have two parts to consider. I don't know if you guys want to just take discussing each in turn and then moving forward with motions, or so I guess let's start with the water. How do folks feel about what's been proposed, and are we okay with going ahead and implementing? So to be clear, for residential users, we'd be establishing new tiers. So instead of there being like a 10,000-gallon flat rate, essentially, and then you just pay above that, we would establish a new monthly base rate up to 5,000 gallons, and then additional tiers from 5 to 7, 7 to 10, and above 10. Does anybody have concerns about that? Are we happy with that plan?
Do you have a question, and maybe just to square away in everyone's head? When you're looking at the tiered rates, we really looked at the fact that 50% of the people in Keno were in that base tier and 50% were over. As new construction's built out here, do we see them attached to pressure irrigation, or are we seeing them solely being put on city water moving forward? Is it just dependent exactly where they're built? I mean, are we seeing a majority one way or another?
Mayor and Council, I would say over 90% of the users hook up to pressurized irrigation. It's complex in the fact that if there is property that is brought into city limits and doesn't have surface water rights, then we might work out a special arrangement with that particular development to run their own pressurized irrigation system. But for the most part, you're required to hook up to city pressurized irrigation system. The only exception to that is because there's groundwater rights, which would be where your drinking water comes from, and there's surface water rights, which would be where your irrigation comes from. So that really, the surface water rights is what determines if we have enough acreage to spread over that property of water, if that makes sense.
That does, okay. Thanks. I just wanted to get it squared away on what the future of the communities would be looking at that were built out here, if it was still attached to the pressure irrigation or moving away from that. So
most of them are. I'm sure you recall Falcon Crest, when it came in on the DA had it, they have their own irrigation system out there. They have many, I think two or three, maybe four irrigation wells out there and ponds already in place. And they didn't have any additional surface water rights. So that's one that will not be on our pressurized irrigation system.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Okay. Further?
I've got a question for Bob. Bob, are there any subdivisions that are not have the availability of PI right now? Butler at one time didn't, and then we brought it in. Do you know how many have hooked up from Butler percentage-wise?
Mayor and Council, I believe almost all of them.
All of them?
Actually, I believe last summer we finished that off, so that was a huge success, and we've had many people actually out there that have actually that didn't want it actually thanked us because it helped them quite a bit. And to answer your other question, yes, there is subdivisions that still do not have PI that we're working on a master plan to try to figure out how to do that and get them PI. It's definitely a top priority to us. And we're hoping to come back with you guys here real soon with maybe a plan on how to start chipping away at that a little bit faster. So we definitely are looking at that, yes.
Since the PI is not available to some, have you taken in consideration the water usage for them where they will be using potable water for irrigation?
Mayor and Council, yes, we've looked at that, and our plan is, since we got a little bit of time before pressurized irrigation comes on, is to come back to you guys with a separate plan and isolate those users and come back with a separate plan for that in the weeks to come.
This ordinance doesn't make an exception to it, though, does it?
It does not.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
So is there a chance we're maybe looking at this a little bit backwards in that we do have neighborhoods that aren't on this pressurized irrigation, and you're looking at about 40% of those people not on it that would be in the higher tiers, as opposed to those on pressure irrigation, you're looking at 70% that would be in the base tier. If this is a fund that is self-sustaining as of right now, why would we not want to look at really trying to make sure those neighborhoods that don't have access to pressurized irrigation, there's something already in place to accommodate that? Because I look at that kind of as a, it's out of their control, and we really are going to be punishing them right now.
Mayor and Council, we fully understand that, and we appreciate that, and we feel the same way, and that's why we felt it was best, since those that is a smaller group of people, it'd be best to come back with a plan, a seasonal plan for those guys. So I can give you a quick example of some ideas, but from the months of basically PI starts June 1st, runs through October 1st. The canals are open a little bit longer than that, but that's basically the irrigation season. So our plan would be the people that have that's completely out of their control would be able to bring back a seasonal rate for them that would account for that and not punish them for not being able to be hooked up. But with that said, I would also point out that there are people that have pressurized irrigation literally next door to them that fall in that same tier that refuse to hook up. So we kind of got the both sides of that one going on a little bit.
And then if you'll recall, though, the ones that do have access for to hook into pressurized irrigation, we've also made it easy for that plan for them to hook up and pay that out as, on an annual basis so that they don't have to come up with the entire fee all at once, too. So we did make that easier for folks. But, you know, that was kind of my point last time that I was bringing up with some of the people that don't have access to pressurized irrigation. We need to take a look at those so they're not being punished for our inability to get them services. So they're working on that, and I think they'll come up with something good for that.
Do we not think, I mean, I noticed that we haven't changed. We're not proposing a change in this resolution to our proposed billing for irrigation water. I mean, it's still in here where it says irrigation water use fee for, this is on page 312 of the entire packet, for city residential property that has no access to pressure irrigation or gravity irrigation because the service is not available in the area. Where usage is beyond 10,000 gallons, but less than 45,000, and we establish a rate of a dollar for 1,000 gallons. So it seems like we already have addressed this in theory. Is it just a matter of, are we wanting to tweak that further, or is it that we're wanting to adjust for between 5 and 10, or whoa?
Yeah, Mayor and Council, I think it was an effort to make sure that we got that right and to maybe look at it from a seasonal increase in water usage above that. That's why we were taking a look at that separately just to make sure that we accurately reflect those costs.
But as of right now, like if we were to go in and implement the ordinance tonight, it's not as if those folks are going to be charged $3.53 for 1,000 gallons of water. It's going to be a dollar.
Correct.
For the irrigation season. Does that help you guys at all? So we're not actually, at this point, we aren't proposing changes to how we've been handling that, which is to say we give a special lower rate for those folks who don't have the ability to connect. If they have the ability to connect and choose not to, that's a different category. But
correct.
And it might be such a thing that stays the same. You know, they're taking a look at it to see the best way to handle that, and it might be that is the best way to handle that that's already been done. So they'll come back and let us know on that one for certain, but certainly would not be a major factor in implementing this as a whole at this point.
Yeah, approximately, I believe about 71% of the users, just as this is written, will see a rate reduction.
Okay. Anything further?
So I guess it goes back to the same overarching question of, are we happy with the proposal, or are we okay with it? Are we wanting to see additional changes? Are we okay with implementing tonight? What are folks' thoughts?
I think I'm comfortable with the, we're doing them one at a time. The water rate is, I have no issue with that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Richard?
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Okay. Just continuing the discussion then, sewer. It seemed like last meeting, some folks were fine with just going ahead and implementing what had been proposed. I wanted to see a little bit more about what would a phase-in look like. I was particularly concerned just with, you know, a large increase and whether folks would be able to accommodate that in monthly budgets. But the lack of feedback is maybe telling. I don't really know how to interpret that. I know that there was a story about this in the CUNY Melbourne News. I know that there's been posts on Facebook and Nextdoor and that sort of thing. And so the fact that we haven't gotten any additional feedback in some ways leads me to believe that my concerns are maybe unfounded. I'm not really sure.
Well, I think that the phased-in approach here that we got from Jared and Bob kind of shows that if we do this in a phased-in approach, it's the end result is going to be dramatically higher. And
I'm not even sure I really understand how to read this in terms of what. I'm not really even sure I know how to.
Jared, do you want to go over that report?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right up.
200 of the whole packet.
So, Mayor and Council, so essentially what it is it's saying under a 5-year phase in, under the plan we suggest, which annually we may have an increase of up to like 0.5% or 0.75%. After 5 years, the senior rate would be 27.67. And the normal rate that starts at 35 now would be 36.33. But if we phase that in over 5 years, the senior rate would have to be 43.03. And the normal rate would be 44.07. So essentially what you're seeing is if there's a phase in, there's basically no reason to have a senior rate because there's almost no difference between a senior rate and a normal rate.
I'm sorry, I'm not following whatsoever. Are you saying that after 5 years, this is what the rates would be? Or
Yeah after okay. 5 years. So essentially we're trying to get to a point where under either plan it's revenue neutral. And so in order for it to be revenue neutral, at the end of 5 years, these are what the rates would be.
So in order to catch up, the rates are higher and increased, so then it's more impactful than
correct
to not do a phased-in approach at all.
No offense, but I still find the tables in the packet a little bit more instructive in terms of being able to actually visualize what a phase-in looks like in terms of what the rates would be each year of it, at what point we'd hit solvency, that sort of a thing. So So for example, on page 234 of the whole packet, I think that is a helpful illustration for if we wanted to do like a 3-year phase-in where the rates would increase about 11.5% each year. I think that's the thing that I'm missing. I'm not really clear how much, like I see what the rate would be after 5 years, for example, but I have no idea what it would be next year. What we're actually proposing to increase, that sort of thing. But I guess it's a question for everybody. If we want to continue going down this rabbit hole, are folks interested in a phase-in? like I said, the lack of feedback has made me, I guess, sort of think that perhaps it's not a concern that others have.
Well, for the most part, the only comments I had were like on the, like I had mentioned, on the water and that tiered approach. But as far as the sewer rates and that type of thing, the only other comments that I had gotten were that people realize that rates will need to at some point increase because we haven't done any rate increases for quite a few years. And everybody that I had talked to thought that it was reasonable that way. So I don't know. It just doesn't look to me like a phased-in approach is a good idea. It looks like we're going to be it's going to make it tougher to dig ourselves out of this hole that we're getting into. And I think if we're going to do it, I guess my suggestion would be to make sure that we give everybody ample notice when we make this increase, and as long as we've done that, I think our hands are somewhat tied on taking the increase. So,
with that being said, should we send out a flyer, notify with like 2 months of bills and implement it maybe April 1st instead of March 1st or something? Just to make sure we give ample notice.
I mean, realistically, can we even get it in this month's notice or in this month's billing?
This month's billing is already, well, I guess it's the first part of the month when that comes out. So.
Like the very end of the month is when they're together. Yeah.
Yeah, so we were discussing that we could give 60 days notice for the rate increase.
Okay. That would be
just a thought.
Preference. So it'd be April.
Yeah, implemented April 1st or whatever.
Is there still time to get it in this month's bill is what the question was.
We probably could. It's all just a matter of getting it over to BDS and getting it in the So you're wanting it as a flyer then? A flyer insert with
the bill? So here's, I guess, my biggest concerns are notifying people that it's coming and not just like a one-time thing, like I'm not trying to point fingers, but like what happened when we switched electronic processing, because that there was like a little note on a bill apparently, but by the time it came, like you couldn't access the bill. So I just want to make sure that people are aware that it's coming so they can like try to start planning for it. A big concern I have is with electronic billing, you don't get any of the information that's printed on the bill. So like, how are we going to let those people know that this is coming? Does that make sense?
And I don't know that additional flyers inside the paper mailed bill even actually do any good. It almost seems like it might be better to have something that's on the billing itself that's maybe highlighted or something so it draws attention to it. I don't know.
Yeah,
most of the time when I get mailings like that, and you throw away the first handful of stuff and then pay your bill, and I guess that doesn't make it somebody else's fault for doing that, but.
We could possibly, I think we could justify and warrant just sending out a postcard to our users separately, notifying them of the change. It is, as you guys have stated, pretty big deal. That might be the best, cleanest way to handle it, and instead of trying to.
Well, just to play devil's advocate. Just number one, I'm not confident people would notice a postcard. But number two, if you have people who rent, like they might receive it, but the property owner wouldn't necessarily receive it. I'm not necessarily opposed to doing a postcard, but I think it also needs to be in with the bill. I'm going to circle back, though, to my concern about for people who pay electronically under the new system, you never see the paper bill that everybody else gets. You don't get any of the information that's printed on that. So how are we going to let those people know that this is going on?
We can vet some ideas, but I would say additionally, other than the mailer, maybe just a press release of some sort that we put out might be our only other option to reach those folks.
Yeah, this has been a long-standing concern of mine with the electronic billing because you don't get any information about, like, shutoffs or, like, anything like that. I still am not confident that a press release and a postcard would hit. Like, if you have a legal owner who doesn't live in that house or who lives out of state or who lives in a different, not in CUNA, like, I just don't know that they would see any of that, whereas they would see their bill, but they don't actually get a bill if they're signed up for electronic. So, yeah, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of been a long-standing problem we've had with the notifications always. No matter what we do, there's always a certain group that don't receive it. So I think probably the best would be just use our social media sites and our next door and those type of things, and then also send out the postcards like you're talking about and do the best we can with that.
We can also follow up with Express Bill, which they're just saying, and see if they have an option too to reach those customers. See if there's another route.
It used to be that you could click and literally view what your paper bill would have been had you received it, but you can't do that anymore. So I don't know if that would be an option, because at least that would also restore the all the information about, you know, shutoffs and all the other good stuff that we think is important enough to print on a paper bill.
We can definitely look into that and do everything possible to make that happen.
And then some people say, I signed up, I guess, for text notification, and so I get a text all the time. I don't know if you do.
I just get an email telling me that it's, I can go pay. But.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll just have to hash through that.
So I think we jumped straight to when would this go into effect, what kind of notice. Did we come to a conclusion on if we wanted to phase even over like a 2 year, or if we're just...
I don't think it makes good sense to phase in. It just doesn't look like... I don't think anybody's going to be happy with that. It doesn't look like it really does any benefits.
Well, I mean, in theory, instead of jumping straight from, 27 to 39, 38, in theory, we could do, you know, half and half and end up with a slightly higher rate, but maybe more like $5 or $6 a month for the first, you know, increase this year and then again next year. But I'm fine with having not gotten any feedback on that people really want that or not.
I think when it comes to it, it's, you're right, the lack of feedback is tough, but I have to imagine that phasing it in with a higher rate in 2 years or 3 years, it'll be harder to suck up at that point than it would be just an initial hit right out of the gate. I would have to imagine it's going to be one of those, I wish we would have just done that instead of paying the extra $2-3 a month. So,
I agree.
Rich, do you have any thoughts?
I asked three of my constituents. They're all my age. Pretty much were around when the first apple tree was planted. So they were all in agreement. If we don't take it now in its full reality, will be hit in the near future with a rate increase. One of them brought up a very good point that I had no response for. He wanted to know why the city took a 3% rate increase this year, and what did it pay if it's not paying the water and sewer, that they have to be increased. So I think any letter, any advertisement, any brochure that we send out need to address the fact of deterioration more than growth in the letter. The letter should be very explicit that this is wear and tear on the facilities. It has nothing to do with the growth that we're sustaining, that they're not paying for all the growth that's occurring. It's just normal wear and tear. But the three of them that I talked to were very, very much just do it, get it over with. So that's kind of the way I felt from the beginning. Let's just do it, maintain the status quo so that we don't have to raise it in another year or two, hopefully. So.
And then just to comment on the 3%, so I think what you're talking about is using property taxes and general fund to pad water, sewer, and pressurized irrigation. That's actually illegal for us to do. We can't cross those funds up, so that's why we wouldn't be able to do that. That's one thing I was thinking about at the last meeting when I was trying to figure out how far we were getting behind each year, was what we could do to pad that so that we didn't have to have the rate increase or the rate increase to be as much, and that's why we can't do that.
You know, nobody enjoys paying taxes or paying a monthly fee. There's no joy in writing checks, I guess, electronically or otherwise.
Okay.
Okay, so is April 1st? Do we feel like that's enough notice?
I think so.
Implement April 1st?
Ignoring all April Fool's Day jokes, yes.
Okay. April Fool's.
Mayor and Council, real quick, sorry. Just so we can clarify, our preference would be for the user rate changes to go April 1st, but the hookup fees to start immediately.
Oh, connection fees?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are being addressed by resolution separately anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, it's okay. All in.
Well, it's what we're being asked to approve. So can we, let's see.
I think we can
just. Is this already reflected in the everything just says February 1st in the versions attached, and I'm looking for where I would.
I think we can just adopt them as printed and just make the notation that the water, sewer, and PI rates would be implemented as of April 1st after we've had a chance to give notice.
Yeah, I believe that'd be fine.
Sorry, I think I'm struggling because for example, the first resolution says effective date, you know, be it resolved that The water connection fees and all other charges as presented in this resolution and set forth in A, you know, will be in effect beginning February 1st. Am I correct that we don't want connection fees listed in Exhibit A?
What page are you on?
Of the whole packet, 314, 315. If so, if there's not an intent to include connection fees in Exhibit A, then in theory I could just say that the fees as outlined in Exhibit A would go into effect April 1st and all other would go into effect February 1st?
Yes, that's correct.
Same for the second one? Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. I move we close evidence presentation and approve resolution number R01-2020 with the notation that the fees as outlined in Exhibit A would go into effect on April 1st, 2020.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution R01-2020 with the notation that the items listed in Exhibit A would go into effect April 1st, 2020. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve resolution number R02-2020 with the modification that the fees as outlined in Exhibit A would go into effect April 1st, 2020.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R02-2020 with the notation that the items listed in Exhibit A go into effect April 1st, 2020. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Item 6C, public hearing and consideration to approve 1906-ZC rezone and 1907-S preliminary plat. Doug Hansen, planner one.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The applications before you this evening are for the rezone of an approximately 7.25-acre parcel from A, agriculture to R6, medium density residential zoning district classification, and the subdivision of the 7.25-acre parcel into 29 buildable lots and 6 common lots. When presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission on November 12, 2019, the preliminary plat proposed 6.26 dwelling units per net acre, exceeding the dwelling unit per net acre density established in CUNA City Code by 0.26. On January 15, 2020, the applicant submitted a new site plan reflecting the net dwelling unit per acre density of 6.0 in order to comply with a recommended condition made by the Planning and Zoning Commission listed in Section J of the staff report, which can be seen on page 405 of the overall packet. However, staff notes that this new site plan does not reflect the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommended condition of adding more centralized open space listed in Section J of the staff report. Following review, staff has determined the rezone and preliminary plat to be in general compliance of CUNA City Code, Idaho State Code, and the CUNA Comprehensive Plan. If the council approves the rezone and preliminary plat, staff recommend that the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in Section J of the staff report, as well as any other additional conditions this decision-making body decides to impose. If the council approves this application with the conditions as recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission, Staff recommends an additional condition that the applicant submit a new preliminary plat to staff reflecting these conditions prior to submitting a final plat application. I will answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, questions for Doug?
Not yet.
All right. Did we have an applicant that wished to present on this one? Yes?
Yep.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. My name is Wendy Shreef. I'm a planner with JV Engineers, and my business address is 250 South Beechwood in Boise, Idaho. I'm here this evening with a small infill project. We are located on South 10 Mile, adjacent just to the north. There's a subdivision called Placerville, and just to the west on the other side of 10 Mile, we have an existing subdivision called Sutter's Mill. We're proposing lots and a style development that's very much in keeping with the surrounding properties in that area. We are requesting R6 zoning. We have been annexed into the city of CUNA. We have agriculture zoning, which is kind of a holding zone. We are requesting R6, and we are requesting 29 residential lots on 7.25 acres. We end up with a density of, we are at 4.0 dwelling units an acre. We have lots that range in size from about 5,500 to 7,500 square feet in size. We did go through and reconfigure our layout on a plat after meeting with Planning and Zoning Commission. Our initial submittal did not meet your net density requirements. So we went through and we made some changes and reconfigured our plat so that now we are at exactly 6.0 for our net density. Our gross density, which is how most cities will look at density, is at 4 units an acre. So we are right in line with your dimensional standards. We are not requesting any variances or any alternative compliances. We will meet all dimensional standards for this zone. And I don't know if you have it, Meryl, you could put up? No. Okay, or a plat.
There's an image of the exhibit, but there's nothing submitted for.
Okay. Well, I could hold up my 11 by 17.
What page did you say?
Page 405 of the overall packet. There is that exhibit that was submitted on January 15th.
Well, Mayor, Council members, I wanted to show you how essentially this really is an infill project, and it's unfortunate we don't have another picture put up. We have two existing homes, which we are kind of situated between. We'll have two homes here. But this really is a small parcel with a lot of site constraints. We've worked with Ada County Highway District on where we're going to do our access road off of Sunbeam. We've ended up reconfiguring that from when we did our initial submittal to meet ACHD requirements for that. But we do not, these are two existing homes that we're kind of sandwiched in between. So this is a relatively small infill parcel with a lot of site constraints. I think what our client will be developing will be an asset to the city of CUNA and really is in keeping and is very much in compliance with or amenable to what's been constructed in the neighborhood. I did hold a neighborhood meeting this past summer, and the only two neighbors who came out were those two property owners who were next door to us. There's a subdivision across the street, a relatively recent subdivision, and I do not have any of those neighbors come across the street from the neighborhood meeting, but the two longtime homeowners that are both there kind of sandwiched in between our common area and where we'll have those two lots, they did both come out. They recognize that this is an area where it is changing. They talked about friends who sold off land in the area for development and talked about kind of potential for their parcels for the future. So we had a very cordial neighborhood meeting with no real reservations from those neighbors for this project. I want to say that Doug has been great to work with. We've had a couple of design things to work through, and he's been a pleasure to work with and a really helpful planner. So I'm here for any questions.
Okay, questions for
Is Ms. there Sweet. A plan to create more centralized open space as was recommended, I guess, by the Planning and Zoning Commission?
Mayor, council members, that was really kind of a discussion when we, and the, unfortunately the hearing was closed at that point. Planning Commission had a discussion on how we could achieve the net density. We were able to achieve the net density requirements, your dimensional standards, without losing a lot. So we have not created an additional open space in the center of the subdivision. That was, I think they were kind of brainstorming with how to get us to meet the net density requirement. We were able to go in, reconfigure the plat without losing a lot.
Okay.
And that would be our preference, of course.
Okay. I guess I'm not sure if I should save it or not, but given that staff specifically mentioned in their report that that they would recommend having that condition continue, is staff okay with the fact that there is not a plan to do this?
That I made mention of that in the staff report because it was a recommended condition by the Planning and Zoning Commission. As the site plan sits now, it does meet all the dimensional standards as far as CUNA City Code goes.
So staff does not recommend including an additional condition that the applicant submit a new preliminary plat that has more centralized open space, or staff does have that recommendation?
So with the recommended conditions, whichever are chosen, I still recommend that they submit a new preliminary plat to staff to review so the city engineer can review it, as well as so we get that site plan doesn't have all of the specifics that we'll see on a preliminary plat. It's fairly basic. The recommended condition that was depending, regardless of the conditions that are proposed with the changes, staff recommends that we receive a new preliminary plat to review so both Planning and Zoning and Public Works can look at the preliminary plat to review the numbers and things such as that.
Should we just ask for that before we approve the preliminary plat then? Are we a little bit putting the cart before the horse if we're approving it but then still requiring them to submit a new one that's more detailed?
As far as if the preliminary plat matches the site plan, I'm not sure.
So, Mayor, Council, let me just kind of chime in as a practicing planner. I think it's a really good practice, and the City of Eagle does that, where you are required to submit a revised preliminary plat prior to submitting your final plat. The reason I think it's a good practice is if you've got a consultant who's starting construction drawings, prior to that happening, they've had to go through and reconfigure that preliminary plat, and you're not looking at a condition possibly not being met with the construction drawings, and that's being reviewed by Public Works. You're getting another chance to go through P&Z approval to make sure conditions are met before you kick off on construction drawings. It can prevent a lot of problems later, such as sort of me chiming in. Meridian does not have that condition. It would be helpful if we did.
I guess my thought was more of a, should we just require that on the front end instead of having to come, you know what I mean? Instead of having a second review, would it make more sense to just say, go ahead and get that ready for us and then we'll consider it?
So what staff could do with that condition is that it could be approved, but we receive the preliminary plat before we'll accept a final plat application to see that the conditions are met on the preliminary plat, displaying what we see on page 405 of the overall packet of the new site plan.
But Mayor, Councilmembers, I mean, I do want to emphasize again, we do meet all the dimensional standards for the zone. That was a discussion that came up with P&Z and became part of a recommendation when we were looking at how to meet that net density, which we do meet now.
Okay. Right. Yeah, and I guess that's why I was trying to get more specific, definitive. Is staff suggesting then that they would like us to remove condition 17 that says applicant shall work with staff to create more centralized open space? And I'm assuming the answer is yes.
So I think we have a couple ways we can go. We can do as staff had recommended there, or we can also continue on with the public hearing, get that part out of the way, and then continue to a date certain where it comes back with the revised preliminary plat.
Mayor Councilmembers, we do definitely want to, we'd like to finish our application tonight and keep the project moving forward, so please let us be part of that discussion. We do, our preference is, of course, to not lose a lot, but we would like to finish the hearing tonight and not be continued.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a clearer idea from staff, because as I'm reading this, it sounds like it doesn't actually require anywhere, like it's not listed as a condition of approval that I'm seeing, that there's a requirement to resubmit a preliminary plat. It just says if revisions are made.
Wendy, did you have a comment?
Yes, they could move forward and provide additional open space between the preliminary plat and the final plat. It doesn't need to be held up. We don't need another preliminary plat.
So the issue is, staff's report says that after the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, there was a recommended condition that more centralized open space would be added. The applicant has stated they do not intend to do that because they were able to get into the R6 designation without needing to lose a lot. So I'm just trying to make sure that staff is okay with removing that as a condition, that there's not standing a recommendation to continue that requirement, first of all. And then secondly, it seemed like the only reason that a preliminary plat was going to be resubmitted was to add the centralized open space. And if that's not something that the applicant intends to do anymore, I'm just trying to see, it sounded like there was still a request to see a revised preliminary plat. So I'm just trying to make sure that I'm clear on what conditions of approval are being requested.
There is no need for a revised preliminary plat at this time. And if they were able to reduce their net density down to 6 dwellings per acre, as requested by planning and zoning, then we can move forward with it as is, if in fact that's the case.
It seems, though, as open space is a different subject than reducing
the recommended condition, number 16, it says applicant shall work with staff to reduce the net density to 6 net dwelling units per acre.
Right. So recapping, as I understand it, at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, they were sitting at 6.26, and so they were technically exceeding R6. If I'm understanding applicant's testimony correctly, at that meeting, there was some discussion about creating more centralized open space, perhaps as a means of achieving, not exceeding, an R6 designation. Because they were able to fiddle some things, they were able to get to exactly 6.0 without having to create additional centralized open space. So we would be removing conditions of approval 16 and 17. There would be no more changes to the preliminary plat. In theory, certainly not adding additional centralized open space.
What I guess
that was my understanding at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting.
So if I can get my head squared away, one was contingent on the other. Then they have to do with each other. It's not a separate issue when it comes to the open space. It was strictly an issue of only the net density in there. Is that what I'm gathering?
Open space the commission would have liked additional open space, but they suggested that as a way to come up with the net density.
So they only suggested the open space to bring down that net density, not based on just having
that was my understanding at the hearing.
So Mayor, Councilmembers, we do currently with this current configuration, and Doug and I kind of went through the numbers this week. We are at 5.7% open space, and so almost half an acre of what was classified as usable open space for the subdivision. So we are meeting, especially with this being a small infill subdivision, we do meet your dimensional standards.
So the 5.7 open space, does that include all, or is that just that one little spot coming in? Including all the end cap?
That is just including the usable open space, so that one L shape in the top left corner.
In the corner. Okay.
Okay. I don't have any more questions for you. Were you finished with your presentation?
I am finished.
Okay.
Okay. Was there any other questions for Ms. Shreet?
Not at this time. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. This is a public hearing. I only had one person sign in to testify neutral. Was there anybody else who wanted to testify in this matter and didn't get a chance to sign in yet? Okay. Cindy Giesen. If you would just state your name and address.
Hello,
again.
Council Mayor.
Thank you.
My name's Cindy Giesen, and I live at 1363 South Ash Avenue. I am a little bit away from there. Between me and them is the Desert Hawk subdivision, a couple others. I'm not opposed to the R6 zoning because the agricultural lands have been eaten up around them. We've had a lot of subdivisions in that area now. And a lot of it dumps onto 10 Mile Road. So I am concerned about the traffic, as we always are. We always want to remind you that this area is mostly rural roads and south of the railroad tracks, so we don't have the emergency services. So you're adding more people without solving these problems. And a few concerns I have about this one is when I looked at the ACHD report, I'm pretty sure it said it's based on 2013 traffic flow. And since 2013, a lot has been added to that little area, 10 Mile. And this one also, this plan shows Sunbeam as being their main road. So I am assuming it's going to go all the way through to our road, South Ash. Okay, and we just had a hearing last week on some 31 homes on South Ash, which is going to be 350 homes on our street, which the planning and zoning agreed is a lot of traffic on our street, that the access onto Avalon is terrible and a blinded hill, danger to the children. That was all agreed, but they went ahead and approved that R6 zoning anyway. So anyway, I feel like we should get an up-to-date summary on the impact on 10 Mile and also Sunbeam if it goes through. Desert Hawk was approved, Desert Hawk 4, with the assumption that that wasn't going to open, and that was maybe a year and a half ago. Now it's going to be open most likely because they're using it as a main road. So I'd like that to be looked into. Second, and I also was concerned about the missing data. Often we have these hearings and they say, oh, we didn't bring this document. I want to hope that these get into the paperwork because it's impossible for us to look back on a history and find out what the heck was going on. You know, for instance, on this one development, three of the planners asked for R4, you know, on our Ash Street, and to bring back a plan with R4. When they came back 3 months later after delay, everybody forgot that it was supposed to come back with R4. And they went ahead and proved it anyway. So it wastes everybody's time, and it's why did we even have a hearing in the first place, you know, that these things weren't really taken care of. And then, of course, I always want to talk about lighting. When Desert Hawk came in December of 2017, it was approved, And in the documents, the lighting in the planning zoning lighting is never acknowledged what's going to be there. What kind of lights are you going to use? Can I go on?
Yeah.
And it's just a side note, but they tell us what kind of bushes are going to be used and how deep they're going to be. And I, in Desert Hawk in 2017, I tried to find out what lights are they going to put in there because I can look directly at that property. They said, don't worry about it, it'll be in the building. So when they started, you know, doing the groundwork and putting in all the utilities, I still couldn't find out. I was asking questions. And so then suddenly they appear, okay, and they're bright. And they're not dark sky in my, you know, experience of what it is. And so I had to look at them for a year while they lit up 9 acres of empty land. I tried to live with it, but I couldn't. I submitted a report that never got responded to ask for some information on. And now it's 2020, they're starting to build the homes. And I've been given another lead to another department, but I still can't find out what darn light they got there. So do I have a reason to complain? Is it really dark sky? It's pretty obvious it is. It isn't because it's bright white.
But did you, so you've worked with staff though on our dark sky.
Well, you know, I proposed it in
our city.
You know, the city council is our last resort to get things through, and I appreciate that you guys, you know, were looking at that. But I'm not seeing it happening until they start putting in these P&Z documents. I think you shouldn't even approve it because you don't know what's coming in there. And if it's as hard for 2 years,
you worked with our department on our policy though on the lighting and that, right?
Not specifically, only that you guys are going to update the zoning codes in. And, you know, they always say, oh, yeah, well, we put dark sky in there. Well, they put the words dark sky in their documents. But I'm not seeing
I thought that we had a hearing on that and that you had actually made comments on those. And
I think it was for the comp plan.
It was for the comp plan. I bring it up. I brought it up for the Desert Hawk. I asked that I know. And they told me, don't worry about it. It's dark sky. And we're going to take care of it, you know. And it's 2 years later, and now I got it in my backyard, and it's going to get closer and closer if I don't pester you all about it. And well, so anyway, this doesn't have it.
Pester away.
Yeah, so this doesn't have it. So I'd like to ask that you don't approve anything that's incomplete like that, and that we get better codes.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions for?
No, I do know that I'm looking if it's in the conditions of approval, but it definitely. Let's see. One of the listed conditions of approval is street lights for the site shall be LED lighting and must comply with CUNA City Code and establish dark skies practices.
That's what they always say.
But
there's things about intensity, about shielding, about height of poles. Some of the better plans have different zones, like ours is more rural. We don't need lights like those that are in the Bi-Mart parking lot. Out in our, you know, if you look around my whole area, you'll see the little yellow lights that give everybody plenty of light. And then you'll look and you'll see Desert Hawk. And it's bright lights with the, because of the vinyl fencing, they reflect off of it. And I have a runway, you know, and so I like to keep that environment. And also I like to look outside and adapt to the dark. And as soon as I look down, it's 45 minutes before my eyes will adjust again to try to find the Big Dipper or something like that. But that's not the only problem. It's the pollution. And it's unnecessary.
Right. Okay.
And I think it should be part of the plan. It's easy. It's easy like telling you what bush you got.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks,
thank
Andy.
You.
Thank you.
No, that's fine. All right, and I had nobody else signed up for that. Was there anybody else that wished to testify in that matter? Okay, seeing none.
All right. Well, I mean, it appears that everything is in order, that... this is a nice little infill project. It looks like they have met all requirements of CUNA City Code and the comp plan. So I feel like I'm ready to move forward. Does anybody else want to discuss anything?
I think, Bob, I'm looking at the public works comments and...
What's the overall page? Tap like in the middle of your screen. I think I can.
415.
Okay, thank you.
And so it does talk about the connection into the sewer system. I had highlighted what I wanted to talk about. I'll be there in a minute, Bob. Okay, so it says that there's approximately 89 EDU connections that may be available. And developer participation may be needed to expand the 10-mile lift station. Will serve commitments shall be based on available water and sewer capacities at the time of construction. Of course, that's pretty normal, but... I guess my concern is it looks like we're getting down to the nitty-gritty on number of hookups available and that type of thing. Is that still the case today, or was that just the case when this document was drafted?
Mayor and Council, so that is the case with everything that is committed. Some of those things change rapidly. This particular one, with the size of it, we were comfortable with moving forward with a will serve. And the part where it says they may be asked to participate, we generally handle that during construction drawings and stuff. We tell them if we come up with a fix, then we address that with them during the construction process when they submit construction drawings. So that's what Paul was referring to on that. But yes, that does accurately reflect at the time of in October.
4th of October, yeah.
Yes, and it does accurately reflect that. But we have made some changes that have, you know, freed up a little bit of room. We currently have two projects going that free up. I don't want to say free up room, but help with the capacity issues.
Okay. I know that's one of my major concerns over there on that side is the ability to serve and our connections, and I think that's one of those where the age of the infrastructure is an issue. So for Doug, when we get into, I don't know, they'd probably be in the final plat now when we start talking about the lighting and that. So when we talk about dark skies, and can we address that so that it's all taken care of? Bob also?
Yeah, okay. The lighting actually falls under Public Works. The reason that's not in the original packet that you guys see, it's because it's part of our standards. We currently have three lights we allow to be used, and we're constantly trying to get those better and make improvements as we hear feedback and add vendors to that list if we find a better product. I can say that the infill lights inside the subdivision are 46 watt, down from 100 and 110. The boundary lights are what they call 100 watt class, but they're actually 96 watts. We do definitely look at every set of plans that come through the door. We look at make sure that they are one of those three lights, because those are on our approved list to be quote unquote dark sky compliant. So we do look at that on every set of plans. And one thing we have been doing a better job at is trying to look at placement of lights. Before, it was kind of just 250 feet, you put a light. So we've been actually changing the way we do that and trying to balance that out a little bit better and be a little bit more forward-thinking. And if there's a window right there, maybe we move the light to the other side of the street. So we've been making pretty big efforts to try to do a better job on that.
Okay, I know you've been working on those quite a while, we have a staff member that looks at the lights all the time and drives around at night sometimes, and so I just wanted to make sure we were continuing to address the concerns that Cindy had there. And
yes, it's not a perfect science yet on what is exactly. I mean, they have to get a dark sky certification. I'm not sure that anybody has mastered that science exactly, what color temperature you use and all of that. But we are working to try to make that better. I actually met with a vendor last week that wants to bring in another product that we believe might even be a better answer yet. So we are continually trying to make that better.
And then I would assume the other problem with balance there is intersections, and those obviously need to be lit better so that pedestrians are safer and that type of thing. So
yes,
getting that balance is probably
it's
the key.
There's a lot to it, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
That answered my question.
Mayor,
Richard.
I'd like to abstain from voting with your permission due to a business relationship with Carl Bader.
Okay. All right. I move we close the public hearing and approve 1906ZC and 1907S with the conditions of approval as listed, except for deleting conditions 16 and 17, and also approving the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and the order of decision as presented in the packet.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve 1906ZC and 1907-H with the conditions included in the packet. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? And that motion carries with the notation that Council Member Cardoza abstained from voting because of a professional relationship with Mr. Bader. Next, we have a public hearing in consideration to approve 1907-ZC and 1903-S, preliminary plat for Robin Hood Subdivision. Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, Troy B. Hunan, Planner 3, 751 West 4th Street here in CUNA, with the Planning and Zoning Department, the senior planner. The applications that you have before you tonight, case number 1907ZC rezone, 1903S preliminary plat, are presented for your vote to either approve, conditionally approve, or deny. Application number 19-14DR was a design review. It was previously approved by the commission on October 22nd, 2019. The project is located near the northeast corner of Cloverdale Road and CUNA Roads. This project is approximately 37.61 acres in size, and the applicant is seeking a rezone for only a portion of the area that was previously approved for R12, or the high-density single-family zone, or the high-density residential zone. The applicant is seeking to change just a little bit of their project from the R12 to the R6, which should make a lot of people a little bit happier, taking it from the high density down to the medium density. As this is just a smaller portion of the greater whole, the Falcon Crest PUD Master Plan Project, it was approved originally as a mixed-use general designation for the comp plan. Staff has reviewed the request and considers this consistent with the future land use map for the city of CUNA in that area. The preliminary plat also appears to meet all of the city of CUNA standards and or meets all the requirements of the previously approved Falcon Crest Development Agreement and follows the PUD standards that they proposed and that this council approved in early 2019. The applicant is proposing public streets for the subdivision. Staff recommends that the applicant be conditioned to follow all of the standards approved in the development agreement and or any items that will be discussed at this meeting or that were approved through the public hearing for the PUD, the planned unit development process mentioned earlier before from 2019. The applicant has submitted everything that is required of the applications and has worked with staff to get everything to you tonight. Staff does find that this application is complementary to the comprehensive plan goals, the comprehensive plan map of the city of CUNA. It's complementary with the planned unit development and also the development agreement that was approved before this council in 2019. And I will stand for any questions that you might have for staff at this time.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Troy?
Stand or sit.
And Mark Tate.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Mark Tate, 1087 West River Street, Suite 310, Boise, Idaho, 83702. We can go to the next slide there. Just a couple of quick slides for you tonight. A lot of familiar faces on the project, so I won't go back through the history. We recently, as Troy mentioned, got the development agreement approved along with the first preliminary plat. This would be the second preliminary plat before you on this project and is located just north of the current entry to the Falcon Crest property. The preliminary plat name is called the Robin Hood Preliminary Plat, named after the short course there at Falcon Crest. As most of you know, the property includes 36 holes of golf currently, along with some ancillary club-type facilities. This is the Falcon Crest Master Plan that was approved as part of the development agreement. The area that's circled there is Golf Village A. That area in yellow roughly depicts the Robin Hood golf course boundary, the short course there. To the north and west of it is the Freedom Golf Course, holes number 1, 2, and 3 there, and number 4 is on the south side of the entry. We've sort of known all along that that Robin Hood course wasn't very efficiently laid out, and potentially we were going to do some development in that area. When we did our zoning and kind of concept plan, we identified that area as something that could be a fairly high density. We've since laid it out as kind of a single family, smallish lot, not small lot area. And you can see there's a boundary in between Golf Village A and the green space there, which is the driving range. We did zone the driving range as R6. The Golf Village A is R12. The reason for the rezone tonight is actually because that line that we sort of arbitrarily drew through there goes through the back of a bunch of the lots on our plat. So we just elected to rezone the whole thing as R6, knowing that we comply with the R6 dimensional standards. As a reminder, that orange area south of the entry road is the active adult area. That's actually where we plan to start the project, is in that area. We do want to move forward on a preliminary plat for some sort of redevelopment of the Robin Hood course. We don't have a specific timing on when that phase will move forward. We felt it important as we try to get the project off the ground that we just let people know as they're moving in, you know, something could change there in that Robin Hood area, and that way people know from the get-go. And then we don't come back 5 years down the road when we've got residents in there going, I thought none of these holes would ever change, or, you know, so felt like it was a good thing to do and get this piece done now. Next. This is just the Trails Master Plan, also part of the development agreement. The reason I bring it up, along the Collector Road entry there, you can see some of the dashed lines. We did, as part of our PUD, go through and actually impose on ourselves a higher trail standard, minimum 8 foot wide sidewalks, and putting a trail network through there. So this entry road collector will include a portion of the trail system there. And this is just the entry in Robin Hood area blown up. Currently, the entry to Falcon Crest is a private drive accessing the commercial area. We've spent a fair amount of time with Ada County Highway District as part of the master plan. That private drive just before the bend would ultimately become a public collector road. Part of doing that is bringing it up to an ACHD standard, which means reconstructing the road, adding drainage, sidewalks, that sort of thing. Given that it's been there since the 90s, it could use some work, but it's actually in pretty good shape considering the amount of time that it's been there. This is the preliminary plat layout, so it does include the right-of-way for that collector road entry. As you come into the project, you hit a roundabout. That roundabout does meet the ACHD dimensional standard, so that would be a public roundabout and the main entry to the Robin Hood subdivision there to the north. The south leg of that roundabout would be one of the main entries into the active adult area. The active adult area, if you recall, is planned to be a private streets area that was approved as part of our PUD and approved with Ada County Highway District. The streets would still be the ACHD standard. However, it would be a gated community there coming off of that roundabout somewhere to the south. Those areas not included in the plat, that represents a planned reconstructed route of the Robin Hood Golf Course. So this plan would retain a nine-hole short course along with the residential development to the north and to the west. It would retain the Freedom Course in its existing configuration. So you can see from the ability to redevelop that and put nine short course holes back in there, you know, from a layout standpoint, it was not a super efficient one. You can see we had to do, even though the golf course is not included in the plat, we do have a significant amount of open space as well. Maybe not necessarily pertinent to our application with you, but I'm just going to tell you because I thought it was interesting. The Barbonas family, who's one of the primary owners of the Falcon Crest Golf Course, they happen to also own the Table Rock Sandstone Quarry, which has been there for well over 100 years. The foundation of my house was quarried out of there, and kind of a cool piece of history. They quarried all of the sandstone for this entry road in the Median Islands from that quarry, so it had some sentimental value to the owners here. ACHD does not have a sandstone curbing standard in their standards, and they were not really in favor of keeping that sandstone there, but after a lot of battling over something that we thought was fairly straightforward, they did finally relent, and we spent a lot of time out there looking at how we can keep that sandstone in place, the Median Islands. So they did come around, and we do have a plan to keep those Median Islands in place along with the sandstone and be able to rebuild the street there. Next. This is just a photo. If you haven't been there recently, there's ponds on the south side of the entry road along with some very nice mature landscaping, tree-lined streets. So we do plan to retain the landscaping, the tree-lined streets, and be able to get some curb and gutter, and then we'll have detached sidewalks and pathways on either side. We'll have the 8-foot pathway on the north side of the collector road and a 5-foot sidewalk on the south side. To the south of our 5-foot sidewalk, we'll also have a cart path. At one point, we were asking for potentially a sidewalk cart path combination that would have been 12 feet wide. ACHD didn't like that idea, so we did agree to do basically parallel sidewalk and cart path. And this is an image of what I was just describing to you and the preliminary plat. And I think that is about it. I did have one comment just on the staff report. It's something very minor, and I think Troy already touched on it. The streets in this particular neighborhood are planned to be public streets. There was a comment in the engineering report about private streets there, but I don't believe there's any action that you need to change the condition. I just wanted to get that in there for the record. The preliminary plat, there's a question on version, so we just wanted to make sure it was the October 15th version, which I confirmed with staff that it is. That is the one included in your staff report. So with that, I would stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Tate?
No.
Not at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, this is a public hearing, and I didn't have anybody sign up to testify. Is there anybody who wishes to testify? If you would, I'll, if you'll speak slowly so I can keep up, are you going to be testifying in favor, neutral, or opposition?
Generally, it's negative, but I've just got a question tonight.
Okay.
I would have signed up if somebody took the paper.
Oh.
My name is John Lawson, 1357 Cowhorse. Not in CUNA. Our address is CUNA, but we're the affected party that are in the county instead. So we have nothing to say whether you guys sit here or not, but we can absolutely see that we're going to be affected by this. One of the things that's really important in talking to our neighbors is trying to find out what the schedule is going to be for this kind of disturbance. We've got this plat could be off in the distance. We don't really know when things are going to happen. And we've seen recently that with the addition of a gas line on Cloverdale, that it really got to be balled up when they were putting the gas line in and rerouting traffic. And a lot of people have concerns that when Falcon Crest really starts to develop this, that Cloverdale's just not big enough to handle this. If you neck it down to one lane, causes a lot of problems. And as big as this project is, there's just going to be a long time where this could be a mess. And I am pretty sure that most of you haven't figured that, unless you live out there, that this kind of stuff may happen. And I know this is more or less an ACHD issue, but I also think it's part of a proactive planning that goes into a city when you take a rural area and throw all that development into it all at one time. And so the thing that we in the county, we're all neighbors, but we'd like to see if some kind of schedule, what's going to happen? When is it going to happen? How is it going to happen? Do we have any input onto, for instance, could we put a road in that would help, instead of going in where they want to go into a different place and take part of the golf course to access some of the places that they need to access, rather than stopping traffic in the middle of the road with big haulers coming from like the gravel pits. We deal with that right on the corner of Hubbard and Cloverdale right now from the gravel pits all the time, waiting for those big gravel haulers to come. And there's a stop sign there now, which is good for them, primarily because they've got to sit there and wait a long time. But it's an issue, and it's something that I really would think that the city of CUNA should think about over and above. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what drives you to have this metastatic kind of growth throughout the county where you just, you know, go here and then 5 miles away you got another part of the city. I have no idea what drives that. But if you do choose to develop that way, you should have, I would think, a plan for how you're going to impact the county. We're not in the city. Hopefully we won't be in the city, but we dang sure are impacted by it. So. If there is a way it could be published in the paper, in the Kingdom Melbourne News or something where you could talk about schedules and how this is going to happen, I think it'd be a good idea.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that's something I've often thought about, because we always, all of a sudden, we end up with a sign popping up and then roads are closed for months on end. And
people don't know.
The schedule would be nice, just because if you get one on 10 Mile that way and then also you have another one on Linder that way, then that creates a major issue. So
yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yes, Bob.
I'm Mayor and Council. Last week or the week before, we pre-conned this project, some of the project with Mark and his team. And we talked in the pre-con about getting some early notices so we can do some press releases and work with the clerk's office and get as much information out as we can, especially when there's going to be closures. So when we talked to Mark and his team, they were all on board. And I don't think that'll be much of an issue. We should be able to handle that.
Okay. Maybe at some point, though, in the future, we just make that a policy of doing business. It's always inconvenient to wait on projects like that, but if we can at least soften the blow by letting people know what's happening, then I think that's a good idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And was there anybody else who wished to testify in this matter? Okay, thank you. Troy?
Mr. Mayor, just for the record, Troy Buchanan. Also, staff already produces a list of people that live within a certain distance of the project. We can reproduce that within 5 or 6 minutes to make it even easier for those projects that pre-con. So
those that are close would at least get it, but yeah. People that are further on down wouldn't be as easy to. Okay. All right, well, that's
good. Approach. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. One question I had. So ACHD made a comment. Don't tell me I'm missing again now. They were talking about an access road for that they didn't see a connection for fire, and if fire was okay with it, then they would be also. I'll be done. How did I miss that?
I know I saw that in the staff packet. Yeah, is that where?
All right. So. Page 461, during the pre-application meeting, there was a discussion about connecting the cul-de-sacs for EMS between lot 48, block 1, and lot 24, block 7. However, staff was unable to find that connection. Staff will support a no connection if it is first approved by the Keweenaw Rural Fire District. And then if we go to the fire district, the only thing he really mentioned on that for agency comment was that they had no problem with the rezone, and then questioned if a true subdivision plat with roads, widths, and dimensions will come later. So I don't think we actually have an answer to ACHD's condition from fire. And then I don't see any conversation beyond that with fire. Yeah, Mark, you can.
Mark Tate again for the record. That's a good test that you were reading all of the details of your packet. the
oh,
connection,
sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. The connection that they're referring to, you'll see that those two cul-de-sacs in the plat are longer than standard cul-de-sacs. We did actually, during our PUD, go through a couple of changes to subdivision standards. One of those is the length of a cul-de-sac, and the reason that we did that is in areas with golf courses, you're trying to minimize the number of times that you're driving golf carts across the streets. So We did talk to ACHD about this. They are comfortable with the cul-de-sacs the way they are. They did just want to get a confirmation that we would have adequate emergency access, and we are planning that between the ends of those cul-de-sacs and to the north where the clubhouse area is. I don't have the map in front of me there, but it essentially would be a widened cart path that would serve as an emergency access. So the typical fire standard is a 20-foot drivable surface, and that would alleviate their issues with the long dead-end street. We are planning on doing that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
And then, so I guess fire then will make comment on these things.
At construction drawing stage as well.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Glad he doesn't trust me. He said up front now.
Okay. It appeared to me that everything was in order and compliant. So, if there's no further discussion, I move we close the public hearing and approve 1907ZC and 1903S with the conditions of approval as listed, and as well as the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and the order of decision as presented in the packet.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second for approval. Was there any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. Thank you, sir. Item 7, consideration to approve $24,000 from contingency for a designated City Hall vehicle. Bob Bachman.
Mayor and Council, recently probably over the last year, we've kind of encountered some overlap and some extra need for a vehicle with another vehicle for City Hall. I should have had it on the budget last year to begin with. I apologize for that. Part of the problem is we have basically one vehicle. If that vehicle goes down for maintenance or anything, then we don't have a vehicle. And with all the extra meetings and stuff that staff has to go to nowadays, just wanted to bring that in front of you guys and make the request that we be able to purchase another vehicle for City Hall. And just to note also, the vehicles that we did buy this last budget, we were just about $22,000 under budget on those for whatever that's worth. I'll stand for any questions.
Which means technically you've already budgeted $22,000 of the purchase. It just needs to be kind of more or less technically.
Technically.
Is the plan to continue getting like hybrid vehicles?
Yes. The all-wheel drive EcoBoost is probably what we were looking at, which it's EcoBoost, whatever that means.
Is it a hybrid or is it not a hybrid?
It is not a hybrid.
Okay.
We can look at, see if they have any of the sport utility type in the hybrid model.
My personal preference is to try to be forward thinking and as responsible as we can. I mean, if hybrid vehicles are most effective for city driving, so especially when it's like shorter trips, lower speeds, lots more starting and stopping is when the battery gets recharged. And if that can bring our fuel bills down significantly, I mean, I think there's value in that and trying to make sure we're preserving public funds and that sort of thing. So that would be my preference, is to see if we can get there with some sort of more environmentally friendly vehicle that will hopefully end up being cheaper in the long run.
Okay.
Okay, further questions, comments?
If you haven't yet priced that out, would you like us to give more of a cushion?
Yes, please.
Okay. Do you have any guesses, like would 30 be sufficient?
I would request that we give move it to 30.
Okay.
I'll do my best to spend under that. But
try for 95 for a Hellcat.
Would you like to get a Tesla pickup truck?
No, thank you.
I think you can use it as a snowplow, too, because it's so angular. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like an old cow catcher.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I move we approve the expenditure of up to $30,000 from the contingency fund to purchase a vehicle designated for City Hall, preferably a hybrid vehicle.
Second.
Motion is made to approve up to $30,000 for a vehicle for City Hall with those conditions. Mm-hmm. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Ordinances. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2020-04, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA making certain findings and enlarging the boundaries of the CUNA Municipal Irrigation System by the inclusion of Ada County Assessors Greyhawk Land Company, LLC, and declaring water rights appurtenant thereto are pooled for delivery purposes, and directing the city clerk to record this ordinance as provided by law, and directing the city engineer to provide notice of this ordinance to the New York Irrigation District, the owners, and update the irrigation system map, and providing an effective date.
Move we waive three readings of ordinance 2020-04.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2020-04. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-04.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2020-04. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2020-05, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA making certain findings and enlarging the boundaries of the CUNA Municipal Irrigation System by the inclusion of Ada County Assessors Patagonia Development, LLC, and declaring water rights appurtenant thereto are pooled for delivery purposes, and directing the city clerk to record this ordinance as provided by law, and directing the city engineer to provide notice of this ordinance to the New York Irrigation District, the owners, and update the irrigation system map, and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2020-05.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2020-05. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-05.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2020-05. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Consideration to approve ordinance number 2020-06, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA making certain findings and enlarging the boundaries of the CUNA Municipal Irrigation System by the inclusion of Ada County Assessors Thomas Peterson and Tamala White, and declaring water rights appurtenant thereto are pooled for delivery purposes, and directing the city clerk to record this ordinance as provided by law, directing the city engineer to provide notice of this ordinance to the Boise CUNA Irrigation District, the owners, and update the irrigation system map, and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2020-06.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2020-06. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-06.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve 2020-06. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Buben Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2020-07, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA making certain findings and rezoning certain real property, to wit, Ada County parcel number S14193334500, owned by Sergei Stadinsky Jr., situated within the corporate limits of the City of CUNA, Ada County, Idaho, and amending the zoning map and directing the city engineer and the city clerk and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance number 2020-07.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2020-07. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-07.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2020-07. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Buben Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance 2020-08, an ordinance of the City of the City Council of the City of CUNA, amending Section 4 of Chapter 1 of Title 3, CUNA City Code, amending the alcoholic beverage license, reduced fees dates, and amending Section 13 of Chapter 1 of Title 3, CUNA City Code, amending the alcoholic beverage license expiration date, and directing the city clerk and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2020-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2020-08. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2020-08. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Buben Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries.
I move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2020-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve summary publication of ordinance 2020-08. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Mayor Council announcements. Does anybody have anything they wish to announce?
Yes. Mr. Bachman, you're on the hot seat. 2.5-3 years ago, we talked about Well 6. If you remember, it's happened again. Only this time, the neighbors are having a girl, and we're not sure what we're having yet, but we're due in August. Your face is priceless when I do that.
I'll put my best man on it.
That's it.
Maybe you should go to bottled water.
Congrats.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah. I forgot all about the Well 6, but you know. Very good. Well, it looks like we have... interesting legislative session coming up this year. There will be some attempt at our ability to collect property taxes at some point. Different ideas floating out there now about making it to where we can either collect, ask for the 3% increase or new construction roll, but not both. I think that... there's one where they're out talking about increasing the sales tax by a penny to help to relieve the necessity for schools to have emergency override levies and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of things floating out there. I don't think anything's yet in the form of a bill, so we'll keep an eye on that and run around the State House for a while. Jared got some information for me today to send off to the Association of Idaho Cities, and tomorrow and Thursday I will be in Boise most of the day having discussions with those folks. So I do get a light breakfast in the morning and a box lunch. So You can be jealous of that if you like. But anyway, so that's kind of all I have on that. But did anybody else have anything?
No. Are we doing exec?
We need an executive session, yeah.
I move we convene executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 742061C to receive information regarding the acquisition of an interest in real property which is not owned by the city of CUNA. Is there a second?
Second.
He's still thinking about well six now.
Yeah.
We have a motion and a second to convene you executive session pursuant to Idaho Code Section 742061C. To receive information regarding the acquisition of an interest in real property which is not owned by the city. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all for coming.